Well, good news, everyone. The Blue Jays have won a baseball game. No, it was not against the AL East, but you know what? I will take it after the last week of baseball we have all endured. Ben, the Jays get back in the win column with a 3-1 victory over the Twins at Target Field in front of a very Blue Jays friendly crowd. I'm not going to call it a home crowd. I don't know if it's quite Seattle crowds, for example, but it's like pretty close, I would say. A very friendly home crowd. I would have liked perhaps a few more runs, but to see them hold on via the bullpen, I'll give a lot of credit for this win to the bullpen. To see them hold on to a tight win is definitely encouraging, especially on a day where Gausman was good, but he was good instead of the brilliant he usually is.
Yeah, it was not the typical length that you expect out of Kevin Gausman. That's one of the best things about him over the last three seasons, even the season before he was a Toronto Blue Jay. So, you know, the walks were not great today. Now he managed to limit the damage caused by it. That's why it ends up being a good start. And I mean, it's still a start that by and large helps his numbers overall, at least the front numbers, maybe not some of the periphery stuff, but you take it. He certainly keeps you in the game. It did not give up that run until he was in the sixth inning, but yeah, huge day for the bullpen. Definitely, you know, some more you could have got out of the offense. But at this point, like you said, I think the Blue Jays people around the organization, and I would assume a lot of fans, like at this point, you can't really pick and choose. You kind of have to, you know, when you've won 2 of 11 coming into this game, you kind of have to take them any way you can. It's first time in 2 weeks, or it's now the first time in 4 series that they've won a series opener, going back to that Atlanta series 2 weeks ago.
That is Ben Shulman. I'm Sho Ali. Welcome, of course, to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We are streaming live on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app, taking your calls and your text. Phone lines are open, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cellular device. 590-590 is where you can text us. That is the people's text line, and it is always open. Blue Jays score 3 runs in this game, Ben. They run into, I would say, multiple outs on the base paths.
I counted 3.
Yeah, 3, I would say. They walk 9 collective batters over. The only pitcher to make an appearance in this ballgame to not walk a batter was Jordan Romano, but everyone else walked at least one. Swanson walked 2, and like you mentioned, Gausman walked 5. So not a typical outing for Gausman, despite the fact that he was still, I think, very good overall. But 9 walks, and they won this game. That is perhaps uncharacteristic of the Blue Jays we have seen. Like if I had thrown out 3 runs scored, 9 walks issued by the pitching staff, and 3 outs run into on the base paths, you're probably thinking we're discussing something a little more negative. So that's why I only say that, because I think it is great that the Blue Jays were able to hold on to a win here.
Yeah, I think this is the type of game that they've lost multiple times over in the last couple weeks. And you know, I have no information about how the universe was formed, but I do believe the baseball gods exist, and the baseball gods are up there and impacting many baseball games. And it's no secret that, you know, despite those outs on the base paths, which I think can be seen as disrespect to the baseball gods sometimes, they got a little bit of help. There were a couple calls that went the Blue Jays' way today, and I think that happens a lot both ways over the course of a season. You're on the right side of it sometimes, the wrong side of it other times. So they got a little help. The bullpen was really good. Gausman was still effective, and timely hitting. You know, they hit when they needed to. They gave Gausman an early lead. They provided at least a 2-run cushion for all of their relievers so that they could afford a little bit more wiggle room. But yeah, it was a skin of their teeth victory. Minnesota's not a world beater, but at least, you know, it's over a team that's leading their division and is an above 500 baseball team that's likely to make the playoffs.
I know that, you know, I'm not trying to discount what you said, because it's all factually true, but the Twins are not...
they're not great. They're not don't great get me team. Wrong. No, they're not great, but they're probably going to make the playoffs, yes, and they're probably going to win, 88 games this year, 87 games this year, partly due to their schedule. But yeah, it's not a terrible team. Like, it's a lot different than, you know, if you did this against the Royals or something like that.
Yeah, the A's or the Tigers or something. Yeah, I get it. I do get it. On the Swanson thing, again, like, I don't think he didn't look great today, I would say. And again, I still think he is probably being overused And that is, again, very likely just simply related to the fact that there are not a lot of other truly reliable arms in the bullpen, all things considered, because the, you know, you bring out Eric Swanson in that situation after Gausman gets into some trouble because he is your firefighter. That's kind of the reason you went out to go get him.
Yeah.
And you bring him out, even if it's not the most high-end bats for the Twins, it's a situation in which you are leading 3-1 and you don't want to let the situation get any worse. So you bring out your best guy outside of Jordan Romano, essentially. And he does his job. He does do the job, but he had a 4-pitch walk
right off the bat. He threw 5 balls to start the appearance. And then he was given a call against Michael A. Taylor. He should have walked in a run, but that happens. I mean, it happens for everyone.
Yeah. 3-2 count, Swanson to Taylor with the bases loaded, a low pitch. And it wasn't particularly close, I would say. And Taylor gets rung up. Yeah, it was not great. It was a gift, definitely, for a guy that was having trouble locating the strike zone. Again, a shaky road, I think, today specifically for Swanson. But you know what? Ultimately, he did not allow a run, and that was his job. He got out of it, even if it was a bit dicey at times. He got out of it, and that's all you ask for. But at the same time, I do kind of wonder if Swanson, I've said this to you before, but Simber pitched a lot last year. Swanson is on pace to pitch more than Simber did this year. So I think you want to see, I'm not saying you want to see less from Swanson. I think another development has to happen in the bullpen to help him not pitch as much as he has.
Yeah. And I think when you look at that comparison too, I think two big things stand out to me as well. Obviously Simber did it last year, but Simber's a side armor, and typically that takes less wear and tear on your arm. So that's why, you know, he's always kind of been a guy who could pitch a ton. Now, last year, I believe he appeared in like 80 games. That's pretty outrageous. But also, he was appearing in leverage, but not the same leverage that Swanson was appearing in. Like, I think the average leverage index stat is probably going to argue after this game that even more than Romano, Swanson appeared in the highest leverage spot in the game. The tying runs were in scoring position. The bases were loaded after he walked a guy, but even when he came in, the tying runs were in scoring position with one out. So yeah, I think a part of the product of it is you thought going into the year you had 3 high leverage righties, mm-hmm. and Anthony Bass and Jimmy Garcia were a part of that. And I think today we have learned pretty definitively that at least for now, they have a second one because Nate Pearson has jumped ahead of Jimmy Garcia. But in the process of learning about this, Swanson had to pitch a lot more 8th innings when we thought it might be, or a lot more high leverage spots,
high leverage,
6,
yeah.
7, 8, when we thought that would be more of an even split, him and Jimmy.
A setup role for Nate Pearson. I got to say, I'm not surprised it's happened. I am perhaps surprised it has happened so quickly. I thought it would take a little bit more for Pearson to be, not given, because I think he has certainly earned it, but to get into that setup role, given the presence of some of these other guys. But I think we're clearly seeing in real time, you mentioned the guys the Blue Jays probably thought they'd get a lot more reliability from in Bass and Garcia, and both of them have been not great. They have not been reliable, although no. I know you've been banging the drum for more from Anthony Bass.
He's been pitching better. Certainly he's pitched better than Jimmy in the last couple
yes.
weeks. I think the stats would back that up.
Undoubtedly,
but yeah. Yeah, to a certain extent, I do think Pearson has earned it. I do think they were a little bit forced into trying some options. I mean, they need, like we're talking about with Swanson, they need someone else to pitch in these leverage spots. I think Pearson is still clearly below Swanson. Don't get fooled by the 6th inning, 8th inning thing. It was the highest leverage spot in the game. The Andrew Miller spot was where Eric Swanson came in. But if you can trust Nate Pearson to pitch in the 8th inning in a 2-run game, that upgrades your bullpen.
I mean, I mentioned the bullpen needed some kind of development, to whether it was to just spell Swanson a teensy bit or just to give them more options, frankly. And you know what? I thought not only the fact that Nate Pearson came out and was effective, and well, there's no name on this text, so please leave your name and location, but it just says very encouraging seeing Nate Pearson throwing up zeros in high leverage. Agreed. It is.
Absolutely.
It is absolutely encouraging. And I also thought more than that, he wasn't that sharp today. Like he was good, but he wasn't as sharp as he usually is. I only say that to say that he can be not sharp and still get 3 outs is something that I think strikes me as even more encouraging than just simply him going up there and getting zeros.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of numbers back you up there. Not only did he walk one guy in his inning, which isn't the end of the world, but it's not ideal.
Yeah.
He threw more balls than strikes. I mean, that's not ideal at all, to be honest. You definitely want that the other way. But we talked a little bit before on 590 on the pregame show about, you know, them picking velocity over control sometimes.
Right.
And as much as it can be infuriating sometimes, when you miss with 98, it's a lot easier to get away with than when you miss with 91. There's just, I mean, the numbers back that up. The eye test would back that up. Like he, you know, he threw a 98-mile-per-hour fastball right down the middle once and got a pop-up out of it. It's just...
You can't catch up to that.
Hard. Yeah, you can't square it up even if you miss the location because you're worried about two breaking pitches and you don't have as much time to make a decision. So, yeah, I think that he's looking pretty good. You know, you have to see it work a couple times in leverage before, you know, your heart rate or whatever is completely slowed watching him into a game. But this has, you know, some shades, I think, of that... That one season 2015 when Aaron Sanchez was setting up for the Blue Jays before he ended up, you know, winning an ERA title the next year, in the fact that you can really dial it up in a short period of time. And he looks pretty comfortable going out there, pumping the fastball, and he's got multiple pitches to work off of it. Whereas a lot of relievers just have two pitches that they're comfortable with. He'll throw the slider and the curve.
That is Ben Shulman. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jay's Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Let's go to the phone lines. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590. Those are the numbers to call. 590-590 is the people's text line. Please leave your name and location if you do choose to send us a text. Let's go to the phones, though. Tony calling us from Maple. Tony, welcome to Jay's Talk. What's up?
Hey, good program as always, guys.
Thank you for joining us,
Tony. Thanks so much.
Thank you. You're welcome also. I want to talk about the Jays. So the continuation of errors, that this time it's not for lack of effort, but maybe overthinking and wanting to make up for past errors, like, you know, weeks ago and whatnot. We got to be careful of that because you go from one extreme to the other. But still in the end, it could have cost them. You know, the quality clubs don't make errors, or very few of them. So right now, the Jays are not, in my opinion, a championship team, caliber team, unless they mature, develop, and become more, how would you say, flawless in their game. But the other thing I wanted to mention, I don't know if you guys saw this in the ninth inning, top of the ninth, Jays are on. I believe it was Merrifield was on first, and Varsho gets a hit. And he's running towards second. He moves out of the straight line that a runner has, that is Merrifield, which allowed Varsho to be easily doubled up. To me, again, that's just, I guess, not understanding the game fully, or am I wrong here? Why would you just stay in the path that you're running and have the second baseman move to the side or throw an awkward throw to first and potentially Varsho safe?
Tony, thanks so much for the call. I do believe in that play he was retired so early that it would have been interference, that it was like he wasn't even halfway down the line, that if he would have kept running, he was by far, that's my understanding of it, that he would have at that point been so out of the way. And they've refined some of those rules too from back in the day. But if he's a lot closer to the bag, I think he continues and slides. But I do think he would have been called there. On the first point, though, I think Tony makes a really good point, by the way, because it's not just, you know, it's not an error that shows up in the score sheet. I believe he's referring to the three guys thrown out on the bases, sure, being Springer jumping, Vladdy then getting doubled off on that play.
Awful.
And then Kiermaier jumping in a similar fashion. Both times the guys from third going on contact with the infield in. And I think the thing that could frustrate people is that it's a mental error, you know, like physical errors happen. The guys are going to drop baseballs at some point in the year because they're not robots, even if they are really good. But it is true that it's difficult to consistently win games if you are consistently making mental errors. And at least over the last week or so, they have committed more outs on the base paths than most teams who aspire to the playoffs are going to commit. He has a point. You know, I think a key part of the difference in John Schneider to Charlie Montoyo is that Schneider's teams are more aggressive, and a lot of the stealing numbers back that up and some other metrics. But you do wonder at times if guys are pressing because of what's going on, or if the instructions are to be very aggressive, and if that, you know, today could have betrayed the Blue Jays. Because Tony is right. I mean, this was a really close game that easily could have been tied up. And, you know, if it was 3-3 going to the ninth, you'd really worry about, you know, when Kiermaier got tagged out and then the next plate appearance, Bo Bichette lines the ball into right field that would have scored him.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're not wrong. There are a couple of texts here that back that up. John from Guelph, Jays won, but could have been less stressful if there wasn't Three Stooges baseball being played on the base paths. The only thing missing was the screen turning to black and white and the piano music in the black background. I appreciate the visual. I think they're right. Like, John is right and Tony is right. Like, the championship level teams don't make those kinds of errors. I mean, I'm sitting in here with you. When Vladdy got thrown out, I audibly was like, what?
That's the worst
bleep are you doing? Like, what is happening? Because here's the thing. Like, the Springer mistake, it is not great. Don't get me wrong. It's not great. But that ball also, Correa was also coming in to get the ball. Correa didn't wait for the ball to come to him. He crossed into the grass on the infield, picked up the ball, and turned to his right, essentially, and immediately sees Springer. So not a lot Springer can do on that play, short of just not leaving the
it's
base,
It's just a
essentially.
One-step mistake, yeah. Basically. Like, he jumps one step, and he's done at that
yeah.
point.
Yeah, so that's why I'm not going to excuse it, because ultimately I think someone of Springer's pedigree, and he's been around the game for a long time, probably should know a teensy bit better, but maybe it was a bit instinctive, and he got caught there. But the play from Vladdy, to have all that be going on, and to have Carlos Correa, who's just standing basically right next to third base, just lace a ball to first. That's to me, that is unacceptable.
Yeah. And look, we are watching, we're in baseball control. We're seeing the same view that, you know, those who watch the game on TV are seeing, but it is, you know, I'd love to see an overhead view. Like, he wasn't far enough from first that it seemed like he could take off for second.
Right.
So at that point, why are you like 9 feet from first base? It's just, it's a confusing play, certainly. And yeah, it's something that has to be cleaned up. I think your point with Springer probably fits too with Kevin Kiermaier. If anything, I think Kevin Kiermaier is well above average in baseball IQ. Yes. I think he made a quick instinct mistake. I think the one with Vlad, there's a lot more time to be looking. And, you know, again, I don't know. We could only see what's on TV. But if you're watching what's going on with George and not either making a move to second or first, then there's not much of an excuse there.
So you and I are in here listening to Ben Wagner's call, of course, and we're getting the TV visuals, but listening to Ben's call. And so I didn't hear what was said on the television broadcast, but after Kiermaier was tagged out, there was a lot of time spent where the TV cameras showed Kiermaier looking annoyed in the dugout. And then there was a later shot of Schneider had his arm around Kiermaier kind of saying something to him. So he kind of looked a little, it was the first time, honestly, I felt like Kiermaier looked a little disgruntled with, because what happened was on the triple, and I was actually shocked it was scored a triple. I thought it was going to be a double with an error. But hey, I'm here for it.
The error rules in the sport are archaic, by the way. I know he didn't touch the ball, but come on, whatever.
But yeah, he gets a third on the triple. The ball then gets immediately afterwards hit directly to Kyle Farmer, like right to Farmer at third. And so he was going hard down the third baseline. And then you can see on the side view of the baseline, he slams on the brakes and then turns back to third and then gets tagged out. I was thinking, maybe was there a stop sign thrown up from the dugout that he saw out of the corner of his eye? Maybe it was an instinctive thing, because again, like we have seen, and this goes back to well before he was a Blue Jay, this goes back to when Kiermaier played for the Tampa Bay Rays and it was terrorizing people for a long time elsewhere around the AL East. I would agree with you, Ben, in that he is someone who has a pretty high IQ play. The funny thing was, if there was a stop sign, I can understand him being a little disgruntled, because he is fast enough to at least make a throw home.
I don't know if he can see anyone though from the dugout when he's running there.
Maybe he decided on his own to go back to third. But ultimately, I think I would have rather, if you're Kevin Kiermaier and you can run that fast, I think I would almost prefer to see him try and make it a play at the plate, basically.
I mean, you may as well, I think, because the opposite is he just stopped and got tagged. But I think he made an instinctually wrong decision. But that happens. It's a split second decision. Yeah. I think that's what differs the Springer and Kiermaier ones a little bit. In Kiermaier's case, I mean, in most situations, he's 91st percentile sprint speed. He's really fast.
He's very fast.
Incredibly fast. But usually the read on a tag play like that is when you're as fast as Kevin Kiermaier, you go unless it's hit to third where it was hit. But maybe for a split second, because the ball's hit at like 96 miles per hour, he thought it was hit to short and he makes the wrong read. And then you're right. At that point, he probably shouldn't hold up. But then again, he realizes he made it. Like in the same thing with Springer, you know, maybe for him, it's left side of the infield. He doesn't go right side of the infield. He does. Or cleanly fielded, he doesn't go, but not cleanly fielded, he does. And maybe he thought it was hit far enough to the right of Correa that he wouldn't spear it. It's still the play at first that, you know, I'd love to hear if there is talk about it after the game. I'd be surprised, to be honest, because it's a rare positive result in the last 2 weeks. So I would assume they're probably, at least in the media conference, not going to dwell on that. I don't know for sure, but it would be interesting to hear what the discussion was about what happened on that play, because there really isn't any convenient explanation I think you can give out for the play at first.
I will say, at the very least, on Kiermaier, that he hit an absolute bomb, like an absolute bomb. I think I can overlook an instinctive base running error, because like that was a home run in 30 of 30 ballparks. So he crushed that ball.
It's May 26th, and Kevin Kiermaier is hitting .319 with an 877 OPS. He could get thrown out at least one more time, I think, before he's kind of burned his goodwill in terms of what he's done offensively.
Where are you at on Kiermaier staying as the nine hitter? Because like the team, obviously, Danny Jansen is down for the count for at least 10 more days, because he was put on the IL retroactive to yesterday, so maybe 9 more days, but still, he's probably not going to come back right as soon as the stint on the IL is done, I would think. So if that's the case, then, you know, I know there's some talk about moving Kiermaier around, but Springer is finally coming around himself, so I think there's no more conversation about moving Springer out of the leadoff spot. Is there any value in moving Kiermaier up? I don't really think so, personally, at this point.
I probably say no, because I don't think he takes any of the top four spots. And at that point, you're still trying to space out lefties. Sure, you could say, well, why don't you flip him with Varsho, because he's hitting better than Varsho? And maybe so, but then he's on base less of the time when George Springer, Bo Bichette, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. are up, which is not what you want. I think you want Kevin Kiermaier there. And John Schneider talked about it during the last homestand, during the Baltimore series. I think it was Saturday. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to change things for Kiermaier. He doesn't want to change his approach, his expectations. They have already received, in terms of totals, like a large chunk of the offense that they thought they were going to receive from Kevin Kiermaier in terms of hits, extra base hits, total bases, stuff like that. I mean, he has well played beyond the expectation offensively. I think you may as well keep it going good right now. You look 50 games from now, if he's still hitting .320 with an .870 OPS, maybe you reopen the file. But I don't think there's too much value in messing with a good thing. And he's been such a good thing for the Blue Jays right now.
That is Ben Shulman. I'm Shoaib Lee. Before we take a break, let's take another call. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cellular device. Hayden calling us from Aurora. Hayden, welcome to Jays Talk. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, guys. How we doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing well. I just want to talk about the catching position a little bit. I know you guys touched on it there that Jansen's going to be out for a little while. But it's more that Kirk's not just hitting. It's the fact that he can't get guys out when they're on the base paths, and we're really struggling in that area. What do you guys think we could do in the short term if Jansen is out a little longer?
Well, Hayden, appreciate the call. Thank you for joining us on Jays Talk. I know there is a thought that perhaps Dalton Varsho could be the catcher,
but I don't think they called up Tyler Heineman.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening. I only mentioned it because I saw some text on the text line saying that, hey, could Varsho be the catcher? I guess if there was a situation where all the catchers in a single game got injured, perhaps it would be Varsho.
He's an emergency.
But
though.
Yeah, I think that is essentially it. This is a team that actually let go of Heineman and then went back and reacquired him and is now have him up to the active roster. They clearly very much like Tyler Heineman. As long as he is healthy, I think he is the backup catcher, and you're going to see Kirk probably catch two out of every three games moving forward. You're certainly going to see him catch tomorrow because Chris Bassett's on the mound, but you are definitely going to see a lot of Kirk. And I would be surprised if I saw the Blue Jays go out and acquire another catcher.
I don't think there's one available right now that changes much. For what it's worth, unless I'm mistaken, I believe the stolen base caught numbers are pretty similar for Kirk and Jansen this season. There could be some validity to Jansen being a better defensive catcher. I'm not sure in that aspect, frankly, that either of them have succeeded a ton so far this year. There actually was not a stolen base also today by the Minnesota Twins. They advanced once on a wild pitch. But I would say at this point, they're not going to make a major move, especially with the fact that I don't think Danny Jansen is expected to be out for long term. So I don't think you want to give out assets for someone that you'd likely end up not using anyway. I mean, they they gave out an asset in Reese McGuire to pick up Zach Collins last year, and now Reese McGuire is still a major league catcher, and Zach Collins is not on the Toronto Blue Jays. So I don't think you want to do that a ton unless you have to. So, and if Jansen was longer term injured, maybe they'd look for someone. But catcher is a position where, you know, some would argue there aren't even 30 quality major league catchers. It's a really hard position to find people. So, you know, if they want any offense out of the position, they probably will just keep two out of three Kirk, one out of three Heinemann.
I know Rob Brantley is a name the organization does like, but he's also an older guy. He's a vet. He has really bounced around the league. You know, he made his debut in 2012. I'm just seeing he's going to be 34 in July. So it's not as though he is a long-term solution by any means, but
he's not on the 40 man for what it's worth too. So they have to move someone off.
Exactly. So I only bring his name up because in some crazy world where like Heinemann got injured, I think he is the next guy.
I think you're right.
Because I only bring him up because, again, I think they're going to do everything humanly possible to make sure that Varsho does not catch. Like Varsho, as far as I'm concerned, Varsho, his catching days are done.
Like I don't believe he's much over. I don't believe he's caught any of the pitchers at all this year. And that matters. Like,
that
I don't think
matter.
He's caught a single bullpen. Like it's you can't just step in. I mean, major league catchers are talented, but to just step in and catch Kevin Gausman's splitter, let's say, or Jose Berrios' slurve, or Alec Manoa's slider, I think it would be risky. And yeah, I don't think they want him to catch either. He's quite an emergency catcher.
Exactly. Yeah. I would be surprised if that did happen. All right. Let's take a very quick break, Ben. When we come back, we'll check out the Major League standings update. Take a look around the rest of the AL East. Take a look at that Red Sox-Diamondbacks game, which is still in progress right now as well. And we'll get back to the phone lines, back to the text line as well. You're listening to Blue Jays Talk, Show and Ben on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Yeah, I think they were just a little bit over-aggressive. They actually were not going on contact. So I think, contact, I like doing that, you know, depending on where we are in the lineup. And, you know, they both kind of got caught in no man's land a little bit. And it's one of those things, you know, you don't expect that from two veteran dudes, but it's, again, I think when you're kind of where we are, guys are trying to make things happen, but you got to take a step back and just keep your focus on the little things, you know, and tonight, you know, those little things didn't hurt us, but those add up, you know, so you got to flip the switch. You got to come in ready tomorrow to play a clean game behind a really good pitcher that we have on the mound and, you know, hopefully have the same result.
That is manager John Schneider speaking to the media after the 3-1 Blue Jays win over the Twins. I believe, Ben, when he says these two guys, I think he's specifically talking about the potential base running mistake at the very end of the game that Tony was calling in about. But I think towards the end of that answer, he was general, you know what I mean? Like generally speaking about some of the base running errors in the Kiermaier, Springer, and Vladdy stuff.
Yeah, and I think when he said, too, they weren't going on contact, I think that means that the instruction, because, I mean, they did go on contact.
Yes.
I think he means that the plan set in by him and Luis Rivera at third base was they're not going on contact. And it was just, I mean, they didn't take off sprinting. Both Springer and Kiermaier, though, definitely took a step or two right on contact, and it burned them.
That is Ben Shulman. I'm Sho Ali. Welcome back to Jays Talk. Time now to check in on the Major League Standings Watch presented by Bet365. With Bet365, you can bet on things like player props, totals, or game outcomes across many different sports. 19+, play responsibly, Ontario only. So the Boston Red Sox currently are up 6-1 on the Arizona Diamondbacks. So if that score holds, they will be in line, of course, for a win. The Tampa Bay Rays did win tonight over the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Baltimore Orioles got pumped by the Texas Rangers. Good heavens.
Josh Young. Write that name down.
Yeah, Josh Young has been excellent. Corey Seager crushed a grand slam. Robbie Grossman hit a two-run jack. Grayson Rodriguez for the O's got absolutely shelled in 3 1/3. Allowed 8 earned runs, 9 runs overall. So with the loss, they are 33-18. With the win, the Rays are 38-15. The Yankees lost to the visiting San Diego Padres, both Juan Soto and Fernando Tatis Jr. hitting a pair of two-run bombs. The Yankees are now 30-23. The Red Sox entering play were 26-24. So if they win, they'll be 27-24. And the Blue Jays with the win are 27-25. So if the Red Sox do hold on and beat the Arizona Diamondbacks, they will be a half game up on the Blue Jays for fourth in the AL East, Ben.
Just to circle back on the San Diego game, big insurance run from Rougned Odor as well. Knocked in one with a single. But yeah, Blue Jays remain at the bottom for what it's worth. When I was looking before the game today, a Baseball Reference does still rate the Blue Jays as having the toughest schedule so far in Major League Baseball and the easiest remaining schedule in the AL East, at least.
They will not have the easiest
remaining schedule in the majors because they'll have to play a lot more AL East teams, but the Blue Jays so far rated with the toughest schedule in Major League Baseball.
I mean, look, there is some time to make up some ground as you get towards the All-Star break. Like before, working in reverse order from the All-Star break, coming back to now, you have the Tigers, White Sox. There's a series against the Red Sox. They're playing better, certainly, and they just swept you the last time you played them. So you're going to take that series seriously. But you also have series against the Marlins, the A's, the Giants in there. And yes, you do have to get past the Mets, the Astros, the Orioles again, and
Mets
the Rangers.
Mets are playing great, though.
Yeah,
Mets,
it's true.
Mets have been pretty average.
But, for every Mets team that you expected to be good that's not, you got a team like the Rangers that you perhaps did not expect to be good, and they are playing very well.
Yeah, right? with incredible starting pitching. So, yeah, the offense would have to be in a slightly different state than it is right now to take some games on the road from the Rangers.
That's a quick check of our Major League Standings Watch brought to you by Bet365. Let's go to the text line. We haven't gone to the text line a whole ton tonight. I see here Tim from Hamilton. I feel like the Jays are really in their own heads right now. A little bit of winning will help them relax a little bit. These aggressive base running errors stem, and this is something you mentioned, Ben, stem from the same kind of attempts that made them exciting and successful earlier in the year. Shaky confidence leads to hesitation and second guessing, which leads to mistakes. Maybe it's blind optimism, but I do trust they will work through this.
I would say a lot of those opinions are opinions that I would share. Yeah, I think that, you know, it's tough to get out of a slump against the AL East. Like, it was one, they had a tough series against the Yankees where they could have won some games. Then they really had a tough series against Baltimore. No excuses there. They did not play that well. But it's really hard to get out of a slump going to the Trop. I mean, they went for four games to the best team in baseball. So I do think, you know, Ben mentioned it to end the broadcast, 21-10 against the non-AL East teams this year. I do think it'll be really helpful for the Blue Jays to just get away from the division for a little bit. And frankly, even if they are good teams like the Texas Rangers, as good as the Rangers are, there's, what, three teams in the AL East with a better record than them?
Or at least two.
Like, yeah. It's not a fun division to try and get yourself right against. So maybe this is a great time for the Blue Jays to get some of that confidence back.
Yeah, the Yankees are only two games back of the Rangers. They have played a tougher strength of schedule.
Yankees are fourth toughest strength of schedule in baseball.
I see here a text from DK. I'm as disappointed as anyone in the team's performance lately, but maybe I need to step back and allow the team to evolve. There are so many changes in personnel this season. The team is still finding its identity. Our perception of light can only happen when we know darkness. Give them time. They'll be fine. That's deep. That's deep,
very
DK.
Deep.
That's
very
the
deep.
Deepest JSOC text I think I've ever read.
Yeah, it is. But I will, you know, I do agree again there with DK. You know, I understand that at this point, super tired of hearing it, but we're 52 games in. There are 90 games remaining. There are guys, you know, I hate to use a reverse example just because I can't think of a guy right now that had a bad first half and great second half. But, you know, Michael Saunders was an all-star 1 year for the Blue Jays and was barely on the team by the end of the year. Like, things can change.
Oh,
and it's, you know, Canadian. I didn't want to do that, but it was just the first thing that came to mind. But things can change quickly, and there's a lot of time for things to change. Here's a positive one. For most of last year, Bo Bichette was not hitting well. Like, he was below Bo Bichette average. And then all of a sudden, he went on a tear at the end of the year. His numbers look great. There's so much time for things to turn around still in many directions. They've made it difficult for themselves, but it's far from over.
Speaking of guys turning it around, before we get out of here, George Springer continuing to look better and better. I do think his second double of the game that ended up scoring the run on because Bo hit the home run. Yeah, it looked like a check swing that he just hit the ball with, and the ball hit the retaining wall and he got to second because no one could get to the ball. But you know what? You'll take it. Sometimes you got to be lucky and good. B, if Springer can continue this, I told you this in the pregame, but I'm going to give it another week. Like, if we're doing the same show next week when the Mets come, when we do the series against the Mets at Citi Field, if he's still playing this well by next week, I think I'll be more ready to say that Springer is quote unquote back.
Yeah, that's fair. I think a good positive is he turned about a month and a half of poor baseball into league average numbers in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see what George Springer has going forward. Thank you for listening to Blue Jays Baseball. It's Ben Shulman. I'm Shoaib Ali. Brought to you by Crown Rust Protection. Did you know that vehicles rust faster in warmer weather? As the weather warms and we all get ready for summer, make sure your vehicle is protected from rust with Crown. Visit crown.com for your nearest location. For Ben Shulman, Ben Wagner, Blake Murphy, Tom Young, and Nick Blackmore. I'm Sho Ali. Thanks for being with us on Jays Talk this evening. Jays pick up the 3-1 win versus the Twins. We're back tomorrow. It's Chris Bassett on the mound, the Hound Dog. Look forward to talking to you then.